Good afternoon. Christ is among us.
He is also.
We have a conglomeration of things to say today, not one straight path, but several different ways. Father is telling me about the talk in the parish about the possibility of having a future council, and which is a good idea. But before a future council begins, we have to understand what a council is all about. Basically, over the years, when parish councils were established in our church here in the United States, which was around 71, it was to get the direct involvement of the lay people, of course, in the life of the church and working with the priest to build the community. But in most occasions, in most of our churches, it became a power organization, and there were a certain number of people elected and a certain number of people appointed, and in each and every time they came together, it was whoever the council was going to control the rest of the parish, priest included, and it never worked properly. And we used to have a variety of ways to bring people in. It was supposed to be a cross-section of the parish, so you need that. Meant you had to have, if there were organizations in the parish, like a men's society, a ladies' society, you had to have a representative, a youth group, a representative, and set up some committees and things to work. And again, in most cases, it became a power struggle. So we're trying to revise right now. Again, we went through two revisions of the bylaws, constitution of a parish council already since 71. And I think we're finally growing into understanding what it really should be. Luckily, the new church law that was established in 90, canon law, called for actually two councils, possibly three, rather than one. On the original parish council, there was a committee for finances, and there was a committee for building maintenance, and there was a committee for education and liturgy, etc. But in most parishes, they wound up only talking about the finances, because that's what the people thought they knew best about. And churches run differently than IBM Corporation or any corporation. And many of the people didn't understand the concept of being advisory council to the clergy, and they thought that we're wasting our time if we're going to meet and then we're not deliberative. The only way a council can be deliberative if we do things by consensus. Problem with the democratic system, so to say, in the churches doesn't work. When you have an election over whatever specific topic, they're discussing a specific topic, say of education or whatever it may be, and the council discusses and studies it, and it comes to finally a vote. And the vote, if there's, say, let's put just a fictitious number of 17 people on your council. If the majority vote yes to do this specific thing, 10 people voted yes and 7 voted no, I defy you to say that those 7 are going to cooperate with the other 10. They're not going to do it because their mind is set this way. The only way a council can function and be deliberative if there's consensus. Consensus is not an easy thing to do. It's not a voting system. It's studying a problem, talking about it, ironing it out, and come to get people to accept something in common with the whole thing. It doesn't work so much in our churches. It works less in the churches where we have a lot of Middle Eastern born people, because that's that mentality. It's a power struggle. And when we have elections, they make sure that every member of their family who never comes to church that day to vote for their cousin. And their cousin may not know anything about the church. So we have problems. In several parishes, I have canceled the councils for a while and set up a committee system. Basically, it's the same, but in their minds, it's different. And a committee for education and a committee for liturgy and a committee for finances separately and a committee for social events and a committee for service and all these variety of things. And each committee is setting up and they're working quite well. But when they were under the council, they didn't work well because the council president or chairman, whatever, was trying to control. And basically, it just didn't grow. There was always fighting. And I remember going to a council meeting right soon after I became bishop to my cathedral. I wasn't the bishop of the diocese, I was auxiliary. And they had a very large council of about 28 people. Don't ask me why that was so big, because that's unruly. And that night, the priest, they sat down, they had their prayer, they started to counsel. They almost wanted to cancel the prayer because we have a lot of business tonight. And it came up, the lady, they asked, they were Lady Society, they had their agenda. Oh, we have to table the Lady Society report. We have more important business. And then the youth wanted to talk. No, next week we'll table you. But they said, but you already tabled us twice. And that's okay. And they canceled all the committee work, and for the next 2 hours, everybody on that council spoke about how to use a thermostat. There was a thermostat on the wall, and they were having trouble in the heating system and all of that. And each one was giving their opinion about this and all of that. 2 hours, 2 hours. And how much should we fix it, and what, on and on. Finally, I butt in and I congratulated them, tongue in cheek. They thought I was being polite, but I was really insulting them in a polite way. And I said to them, I'm just so amazed how the priest has chosen 30 people, 28 people, who all knew something about thermostats and heating systems. Not one did. Not one did, but they thought they did. So we never grew. We never got ahead of it. So we're again looking at a revival. Thank God times have changed. New ideas are cropping up. But the main thing is we never looked at this on establishing a council. We never looked at the Bible. We looked at the human ways. So let me just take you to one short reading and show you in that short reading what's the basis, the bare basis of a council is. And it comes from the Acts of the Apostles in chapter 2, verse 43, for a few verses after that, to 47. And this, remember, Acts of the Apostles, written by St. Luke, was the first Christian community after the resurrection, ascension, and Pentecost. Now the Spirit came upon the church and the community comes to life. And it explains to us how the early Christians lived and worshipped and prayed and what they did. So it speaks here. It's the little sub-paragraph in your Bible says, the life among the believers. The believers now are those who accepted Jesus Christ. And it says, all who believed were together. And all had things in common. And they sold their possessions and goods and distributed them to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they partook of food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. That little paragraph is the core of a council. It's the core of a council. Let's break it down a little bit. They're talking about the early believers now. And wait, I think What didn't I read? Oh, I should go back a verse or two. I'm sorry. This is right after Peter gives the whole talk and all of that, and this is talking about the first converts now who have come. And they held steadfastly to the apostles' teaching and fellowship and the breaking of the bread and to the prayers. That precedes it, okay? They held steadfastly to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship and to the breaking of the bread and to the prayers. And so if we now to break this down, the breaking of the bread was the Eucharist. In the early church, the very early church, it was done at home in an evening meal. After the meal was over, they broke the bread and had the wine and they had the Eucharist. Very simple ceremony, nothing like we have today. And again, for a couple hundred years, 200 years, the same thing. They then added to that Eucharist more study of the apostles' teaching and stuff. Okay? Until Christianity became the religion of the empire. Now we were able to go out of our homes and build chapels and churches and then do much, much more. So here's the core. The breaking of the bread. What was the breaking of the bread? It's liturgy. It's not just the breaking of the bread today, but it's the prayer life of the church. Matins, Vespers, Orthros, or Vespers, daily prayer at home, whatever it may be, all of the liturgical services of the church are basically what this entails. So liturgy is number one, and that's why we are Christian. The first duty of a Christian is to thank God for what he gives us, and that's the Eucharist and all the other prayers involved with it. And it says, and they held steadfastly to the apostles' teaching and fellowship. The apostles' teaching was certainly based on what they knew, the Old Testament. They were Jewish people, and they certainly studied the, and they had to teach them about the Old Testament and how now Christ fits into this and fulfills it. So there was education, if you want to call it, or nourishment, nurturing the faith through understanding what the apostles' teaching was about. And they had fellowship, and again it says later, they were all together. Fellowship and all together basically boils down to being social life. So now you have a third category, social life. And that flows from the liturgy and the education. They did things together. They had a birthday party, or they had somebody's anniversary, and they celebrated. And they were together. And then it says, they sold their possessions and goods and distributed them to all as any had need. Basically, we hear service. They pooled their resources and they used them to those in need. Service. So there's four basic elements of what it means to be church, right from the first community. Liturgy, nurture or education, social, and service. And then it ends up, again, it speaks about gathering in the temple and the breaking of the bread and partaking of food with glad hearts, again, social. Praising God and having favor with all the people. The last sentence is very important. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. When those four elements were being lived and worked out properly, evangelization was taking place. So you have a fifth idea now. Now, more people were coming into the body of Christ. So those four elements are what the early church saw as the necessary ideas of what it meant to be a community. Had we looked at that from way back when, we wouldn't have developed these parish councils based on the secular society's bylaws and all of that, but we would have looked at that a little clearer and started to develop from there. One of the very famous American theologians, Avery Dulles, was very big into developing that idea from there. So basically now, if we look at those four elements, mostly everything we do in the community can fit into one of those categories. So a parish council is based on activity rather than just control factors. The new church law was very clear about that because of the issues that we were facing. They finally broke down and said a parish needs a council. And that council is pastoral. Okay? And then you need a separate council, a finance council. And you can even have a third council, property and building maintenance. And by separating these councils, you choose the people for the finance council who have better technique in finance and they work it, and the people that know about building and property maintenance, instead of 32 people sitting at a parish council talking about a thermostat, okay, they don't know anything about it. And the idea by separating them, we don't have that fight or the going into a parish council and everybody wants to talk about money. That's all it ever boiled down to. So we need it to do something about this in the church. In some of our parishes, they still fight, and some of them are a lot better, provided the way the priest also understands it himself, and not to see himself as the power guy behind it all also. When a parish council meets and they discuss and they talk and they talk and they talk and the priest listens to everything they said and they may have agreed on something, the priest turns around and does completely opposite, something is wrong. Something is wrong. There has to be a melding together of the two, the clergy and the laity together. And that's why the consensus idea is much, much better. It takes longer to have consensus than it does to take a vote. But the voting people, and I always say, those seven people who said no and 10 said yes, those seven people are not going to be very happy and they're not going to cooperate with the 10. So somebody said, well, they should because that's democracy. The church is not a democracy. And church is not a democracy, and we're seeing a lot of troubles even in our own democracy today, and I don't need to get into that. You know it yourself. You hear it every day on the news. There's a blonde guy who does a lot of talking, so creating a lot of problems by his mouth too. But the idea of a council then is the council of pastoral issues. So what's the role of a parish council? Advisory council, if you want to call it, or a pastoral, I like the word pastoral better, okay, or the council of stewardship. There's two major issues that go together, and stewardship is one of them, and discipleship. Stewardship is basically discipleship with Jesus Christ. We are called to be disciples. By our baptism, we enter into the body of Christ. By our chrismation, we're anointed to become another Christ. And that means we have to do something. We have to do something about it to build up the body. So we look at several things. I think to start this council, Father gave me one of the papers that he put together for you, the Stewardship Council, and dividing it into teams. Instead of the word a committee, a team. Fine. Most people who know committee, most committees, when you appoint a committee head, a committee means minimum of three people. And usually the committee head says, I'm the committee. Same problem. So we need a working together relationship. But to do all of that, we need actually a leadership training. What does it mean to be a spiritual leader? Most of our people don't understand that in parishes. more so in our Eastern churches now, which we've lacked in this area of really training leaders. Leadership for our laity means, oh, I'll do the cooking for a party, and I'll do the cleaning for a party, and everybody is focused on this party, and that's leadership. That's not what the leadership of the church is all about. There's a spiritual leadership. And the spiritual leadership is just as much as part of the laity as it is of the clergy. The fact that we're baptized and chrismated, we become part of the royal priesthood of Jesus Christ. And in that royal priesthood of Jesus Christ, we all have the right to be spiritual and to understand it. Many times it's much better for a peer group to bring in their friends than it is sometimes for the priest. Because they're going to say to the priest, oh, that's your job, you have to tell us this, and you have to preach to us. And in the minds of most people, that's not the job of the laity. And when a lay person, man or woman, talks to a friend of theirs who should be involved in the church and tell them how important it is for themselves to be in the church and how it could help them, now they begin to see a little differently. It's not, they, in their mind, it's not your job to say that, but you are saying it. So maybe they open their mind a little faster. So when Father set up this thing, he put the different teams. And if we look at these different teams, you'll see that most of them are going to fit into those four elements. Remember, liturgy, nurture or education, social, and service. So Father put down acolytes. Where do you think that'll fit?
Liturgy.
Okay. Choir.
Liturgy.
Cleaning the church hall. Now here I would pull that out from the pastoral council and stick it into another council called building and property maintenance, okay? For the future, not right now. Education, very clear under education. Evangelization basically fits in all of them. Fits in all of them. In each aspect you're evangelizing. And it works, so it's a conglomerate one, so to say. The facilities, again, for the building property maintenance. Finance, a separate finance council of professionals that know how to do it, a small council, to understand how to bring the income in and how to teach the people about the stewardship of income. So there's education involved in it. And not just trying to how to spend the money. Okay, and then hospitality. Where do you think hospitality may fit in?
Social.
It can fit in social, and it could fit in liturgy too, because from liturgy, everything flows. After liturgy, you run over to that hall back there, and you have a coffee hour or a luncheon, and it flows from the liturgy. And we need to connect the liturgy to the social life. To the social life, particularly on feast days when you have that opportunity to do it a little bit more. So these are the basic ideas. Stewardship, let me just touch a little bit on stewardship. Like I said, I'm talking a variety of areas here today. In stewardship, this word is much more recent in the Catholic Church than it was in the Protestant churches. They use it much more. The Catholics just found it about 30, 40 years ago. A steward is a manager. That's all it is. By the way, the word steward comes from sty ward. The ward who took care of the pigsties. Okay, that's where the word came from, steward. And it means basically that as a steward, we're managing someone else's property. We're taking care of it. We're taking care of it. Well, whose property are we managing? God's. God's. So the spirituality of stewardship started to develop, and we began to understand it much better. Most people, when they first heard the word stewardship, heard money. And that's not the only level of stewardship. Actually, we boil it down to what we call the three T's: time, talent, treasure. We'll talk about that a little bit more. So, the spirituality of stewardship recognizes, first of all, that everything we are and everything that we have comes from God. There's nothing that really belongs to us. You come into the world naked, and you leave it very much the same with clothes. Sometimes they even rent clothes or buy new clothes for the person who died. So everything you have comes from your life on earth, from God, to use for a while. Nothing goes with you. Nothing goes with you. So everything that you have and use is for His glory while you're on earth. So everything comes from God and everything belongs to Him. There's a few good stories that help us understand this. You have to be able to change the old mentality of who you're insulting in stories like that. So I'm not going to tell you the whole thing, but a very well-to-do rich man died, and before he died, he knew he was dying, so he gave $1 million to three different clergy and said, use it the way you want in your churches. Use it the way you want in your churches. But under one condition. The one condition is, if I die, and when I die, whatever you didn't use has to come back and put into my casket. Who thought the guy was going to die so quickly? Nobody did. The first one came back to his funeral crying because he hadn't used anything yet in his parish. So he put $1 million in the guy's casket. And the second one had spent a couple of $100,000 only, and he was crying. And so he put the leftover in the casket, close to $1 million. And the third guy came and looked at it, pulled it out and counted it, wrote out a check and put it in. Okay? Nothing goes with you. Nothing goes with you. You can't use it. So the idea of stewardship is everything comes from God. The money He allows us to make, the clothes that we buy, the house that we live in, it's all for His glory. Then the second aspect of the spirituality of stewardship, well, we then learn to respond to God in gratitude. There's thankfulness. The biggest thankfulness is the Eucharist, because that means thanksgiving, okay? And we respond to God in thankfulness that He gives us all this, and we give back to Him a share of what He gives to us. In the old mentality, before all this started to come in, the old idea, people used to go to church and they threw in a dollar bill and they thought they did their job. And certainly when you do that, or even a $5 bill today and even a $10 bill today, you're just telling God, hey God, you're cheap. You didn't give me enough. And you're giving Him a very small gift back, okay, when it comes to the money. Spirituality of stewardship recognizes too that gratitude, our thankfulness, is nurtured within the community of believers. That we're all together and we share this. So there's several elements of parish stewardship that need to be looked at. And we'll talk about a future program for it. First of all, the commitment. The pastor must be committed, number one. Okay? And a stewardship commission to study it. Everything needs to be studied. A committee, if you want to call it, or a commission. And it begins to foster stewardship in the parish, and you'll see that there's levels. It's not just the finances, of course. And then to have an annual plan, and then to have a renewal plan each year. And as you develop time, talent, and treasure, that's the basic of stewardship. Everything we have comes from God. He puts us on earth for a short period of time. We don't know how long it is. So our time is from God, and we give back to God some of that time. Our talents that God gives us are gifts that we use, not for ourselves, not for ourselves. Somebody gets a beautiful voice, okay? They could sing all they want at home, but nobody's appreciating it. But when they practice a little bit, and even come to church, like we heard today, and we hear a beautiful voice, we say, ah, what a beautiful voice. It's appreciated, okay? It's a gift that God gave that person to use for other people. When you get it, when a woman gets a beautiful diamond ring as a gift, she might lock it up in, if it's very expensive, she might lock it up in the safe or in a bank vault or something. But when she wants to put it on, she makes sure that people see it. So they say, ooh, ah, that's a beautiful gift. Okay? It's something that is appreciated by others. Artist can paint all he wants in his own house. Who can see it? Nobody. So they paint and they put them in museums. And now you go and you enjoy the gift of that person. So God gives talents to everybody. To everybody. And those talents we have to give back to Him for the building up of His body, the church. Treasure, God gives us the right to make money and how to use it. And therefore we give back to Him in the gift or gratitude of what He gives to us. The basic biblical idea of stewardship is tithing. We hear it from the Old Testament time. It's mentioned in the New Testament based on the Old Testament. That's all. The New Testament changed it a lot more in a sense. You give all to God. But the minimum that was required was a tithe, a 10%. Now, that's not just finances. It's a 10% of time. It's a 10% of talent. It's a 10% of treasure. And if everyone was able to do that, the churches blossom and function. They do well. Time, treasure is simple. You figure it out. Take your salary, divide it, give 10% to God. The basic idea today in the church is 10% should be the benchmark if you can do it. If you don't do it, you start to work towards it. And it's very interesting because it does work. And you give 10% to God first. 5% generally is recognized for the church. Okay? 3% is recognized for the work of God in service, say, within the local community, charities, if you want to say, and another 2% to make up the other 5 for maybe foreign charities, whatever it may be. But that's the benchmark. That's the benchmark. And not everybody does it. And sometimes, even if they gave 5%, it would be a very good blessing. And it's a process of learning and teaching. Pastoral council should be involved in understanding stewardship. So when you start a parish council, before you even start business meetings, you need to go through a program that teaches about leadership and about stewardship so that we understand where we're going with this whole thing. And we do have some helps for you on that. Another element of parish stewardship is hospitality and evangelization, where the concept of the community, the importance of belonging, is very necessary. When people come to a church, if they just come to sit on a bench for an hour and go home, it doesn't mean much. But when they're involved in the community and get to know each other and share with each other, the hospitality begins and the evangelization takes place. And we welcome other people in. So many times people don't understand this in our parishes because they become cliquish. So I'll tell you another little story. This was a man in Michigan. When I first got to Michigan, I was auxiliary bishop and living in the parish. And I started with them a evangelization committee to try to welcome other people into the church. And it was very interesting. After liturgy in that parish, each family or their friends went to this table, one to that table, and every week you knew where they were sitting, the same tables. Somebody else, so this, I happened to meet a young man, married man, and his wife and children. He was born and raised in southern Lebanon, where in a village that did not have the Melkite church. So his family put him in a Protestant school where they were existing there. And he went to Protestant school, so he never really knew his background that much. And as he came to the United States, he got married. His wife came from a very, very evangelical Protestant background in the Middle East. And he went to one of the Protestant seminaries and started being, he was a very good preacher, and he was living in Dearborn thinking that he's going to convert all the Muslims. Well, that's not so easy to do, especially when we're not, in the Middle East, you're not allowed to do that. You know, you can be killed if you try to evangelize a Muslim. Somehow or other, he met up with a priest who put him in contact with me because of the tradition, because he began to see what he felt was not the strongest theological background in Protestant, with all the breaks in different groups and stuff. And he was coming back to the traditional Church of the Apostles. And we met, nice guy, had two children, two or three. So welcomed them to come back to the church. And I saw in him a future vocation, because he already was a very good preacher and doing very, very well. And he had the technique. So he came to church. We had a very large, it was a converted rooms in some schools. And about halfway through, there was an aisle across too, beside the aisles down. So one of his children was in a stroller, carriage. And they came in church, and he was very, very noticeable. Tall, good-looking guy, beard, two children. He sat there. Every Sunday he came in, halfway in the community. We'd go to the church hall after liturgy, and he was sitting all by himself. So after a couple of months, I wasn't always there. After a couple of months, he called me up, and he says, it's not working. I just feel very uncomfortable there. I said, why? He's, no one talks to us. No one talks to you. How'd they miss him? So when we went to the next meeting that I had with the group that was studying about evangelization, I brought this up to them. So one of them said, oh, was he that guy with the beard with the stroller? Yeah. Who is he? I said, why are you asking me? Why didn't you go up to say to him, hi, my name is Joe, what's yours? You saw him there. Oh, we didn't know him. Well, how are you going to get to know somebody? You saw him in church. He was trying. You know, nobody talked. Because he wasn't their cousin. I said, you don't have a sense of hospitality. Someone new comes in the church. The first thing, this is why you need some ushers, men and women, that's fine. And the first thing they do is meet this person. Hi, welcome to our church. And if and they can see they're new. Have you ever been here before? No, thank you. Good. My name is, what's your name? They give the name. Here's the book for the liturgy. And here's the page we're going to start on. And then at the end of the liturgy, make sure you go up to them again and talk to them and say, we have a coffee hour. Would you like to join us? And introduce them to a few more people. Now they feel comfortable. Most strangers to any situation feel a little shy. You get some very aggressive ones too, but the average person is a little shy. And they're waiting for somebody to say hello to them. That's how it develops. So this concept of hospitality is really important in a church. The ushers are not there just to tell people, don't sit here, don't sit there, go over there. You know, that's not their job. Their job is to welcome people and give them the book. There's a book on evangelization that Father Matusiak did, an Orthodox priest friend of mine. It was very good. I've used it numerous times, and I was using it there. And one of the things he talks about, and this was a true thing, there was this man shopping for a church. whatever tradition he came from, he was looking around. So each week he would go to a different church, to a Catholic church, to an Orthodox church, to a Methodist church, to a Baptist church, to a Lutheran church, whatever. And he had a score system. Okay? For every person, he would go into the church, he would sit someplace well seen, make sure he goes to a place where people see that he sat. At the end of the service, he'd get up and he'd walk around and look at things on the wall so that visibly he was there, and then go home. Each church he gave a scorecard. If somebody said hello, he'd give them a point. If somebody said, hello, my name is, what's yours? He'd give them 2 points. If somebody said to him, after church we have a fellowship, would you like to join us? He gave them 3 points, 4 points, you know? And if somebody said to him, anytime you'd like to come back, please, you're welcome, he'd give them 10 points. Most Catholic churches and Orthodox churches never got over 3 points. Protestants did. They didn't get it because we were closed on the mentality. Okay? So this hospitality is very, very important. And there's a lot of people unchurched who are looking. Opportunity. Another element of stewardship is the formation toward a spirituality of stewardship and discipleship, because that's the whole thing. So we need to be spiritualized in this, and we need to learn more about it and to discuss it and pray about it. The development ministry in a parish is involved in stewardship. The more activity in a parish, the better the growth of the community, of the parish community. If we're still looking in the old mentality of 50 years ago, you had a ladies' society and a men's society. Okay, generally the ladies were more active and the men sat and played cards. But things have changed. Life has changed. And some people don't like ladies' societies and men's societies. That's fine. You can have couples together, you know, whatever it may be, family-oriented. And a variety of ministries. We celebrate our outreach mission, our outreach liturgy in Mission Viejo, California, from the Orange County Church in Placentia, once a month at a very large Latin church, St. Killian, in Mission Viejo. And I took their bulletin. The bulletin's 15 pages. And in it are 25 different ministries in the parish. A ministry to divorced people. Every ministry had a lay leader. Ministry to alcoholics. A ministry to the youth. A ministry to the young adults. A prayer group who came every week during the day. A group of older people who couldn't come to the church at night. And they had a prayer group and they had a social. All these different ministries in the life of the church. And so many churches, even small churches, could have them. It's just amazing. So it's the ministry of the laity, which is very, very important. We didn't follow up on this very strongly. When a parish starts to develop this leadership and stewardship, the way you can do it is by a fair. Okay, once a year you have a 3-week celebration of stewardship, one Sunday talking on time, one Sunday talking on talent, one Sunday talking on treasure, and you have witness people giving it, not just the priest. Okay, people in the community who seem to be understanding a little better, and they give a witness on what they do, and then you go to the church hall on, say, the third Sunday, and they set up the church hall like a fair. Did you ever go to book fairs and different fairs in school? And each ministry or community in the parish has a table set up. And the table is decorated maybe with some balloons and everything else, and there's flyers on the table, give outs and things like that. And each one is saying what they do. And you walk around and you see the Ladies' Society and all that they do, and the teen club and what they're doing, and the people working with hospitality. And you begin, and you have a little sign-up sheet at each one to get them involved. So it's a fair, an active way of showing how a parish can grow. And then each year you do it again, and you just keep re-educating others that come into it. Remember, Christ started with 12, and look where we are today. So when people can start with a small number, it will blossom, because if you start with 5, and after a couple of months, now you send out those 5, you're going to get 25 back. Again, each one getting 5 more in 5, and it blossoms and it grows. The annual stewardship renewal is very necessary. And then the gratitude and accountability is very, very necessary. The recognition of stewardships of parishioners for what they're doing in the life of the parish. It tells the story of the parish. There's nothing wrong with honoring or welcoming someone who's really doing a very good thing. Okay, what do we do with it all? How do we do it? We've developed 2 different programs a number of years ago. I think it was 90 or 90, 95, I don't know. I have a leadership weekend program, and then we have a stewardship weekend program to help educate the people. And I would say that before you can have these teams that Father's working on right now, it's very good, but to start getting those team leaders and the members of those teams to go through a little bit more of a spiritual educational program. Both of these programs are 6 sessions. They can be done. The best way to be done is a Friday night and a Saturday and ending on a Sunday morning. The best way to do it. Each session is approximately 2 hours, and it's not just me or Father or somebody else just blabbing to you and talking. No, it's table settings, and there's interaction. There's a short study. There's a Bible study, and there's some answers, questions and answers that you share with each other, summarizing what's going on. If you do it in several communities together, you start out with variety of people, you end up with your own, so you come back with a plan for your own community. And the stewardship one, I would say that it better to start with the leadership one first and then do the stewardship, because they work together. The session one is talking about stewardship in the tradition of the Eastern churches. It's very interesting when it's a talk that I gave to the National Stewardship Committee in the United States, which then became international. So I gave it in Orlando, Florida, nationally, and then when they went international, they asked me to come back, and we gave it in Rome at a conference there on international stewardship. So it's a talk I gave that basically explains to us the stewardship based on our Eastern tradition and the fathers of the church, which is very, very strong, very strong. We never heard about it too much, but it's there. It's really there. And it was interesting when I was giving it at, I think it was Orlando, I'm not sure. Yes, it was the Orlando one. There were several bishops it's a big international, a big congress they had in Orlando, a couple thousand people, and they had workshops. So at the dinner time each evening, or lunchtime, I don't remember which one, the different speakers were invited to a luncheon hosted by the stewardship committee that ran this whole thing. And one of the bishops said to me, he said, I always thought you, I'm surprised you're talking about stewardship. And he said, we have to learn from you. I said, what do you mean? He said, I really have seen the Eastern churches as being much more involved in stewardship. And I'm looking at them kind of funny. I don't think they are. But so Somebody else showed it to me. He said, most of your communities are much smaller. The average Latin churches today, they're going up to 3,500 families and 4,000 families, these mega churches. He said, and all your smaller communities all have churches and they have halls and there's people active. And it's true. But we didn't focus enough on the spiritual aspect, that's for sure. So that's the first session. The second session is going to be talking about the spirituality of stewardship. The third session, going into the stewardship of time. Then the fourth, talent. The fifth one, treasure. And each one is talked about with short little discussions and in involvement and activation. There's participant give outs, and you have paper in front of you to work. There's a presentation, there might questions and answers, and you discuss them in your group, and you share with each other. You share with each other. And then I also give a handout of the stewardship in the tradition of the Eastern churches from all the different places that I did some research on, not all of it, the different fathers talking about the same idea of stewardship. John Chrysostom, Maximus, John of Damascus, Cyril of Jerusalem. Why did they know that word? No, they didn't know the word. But they were talking about the same thing that I'm talking about right now. And session six is making a plan of action. That little weekend you do is nice. It's important. But to go home again and just not do anything, you wasted your weekend. It's a waste of time. You make a plan to go home. And this is an ongoing thing in the community. An ongoing thing. Each year you can do this again. The same thing with the leadership program. I think it's basic to start with that. And the leadership program should be given annually to different groups. And once you have it the first time, the way you see my setup here, and a fairly educated layman can also give it, who's gone through it, and he can be the leader of it. It's not just the priest being there. The lay leadership is very important too. And it's very simple because I set it up. I even have a time schedule. You have 10 minutes for that, 5 minutes for that, and it moves on. And it's very important. And that should be an ongoing thing in the parish, because my basic belief is if you're going to have any elections for a parish council or any appointments for a parish council, both, half of it can be elected, half can be appointed, after we make new guidelines, I would say that only those who have gone through the leadership program can be chosen, because they know what a council means. The others who don't know what a council means can create disruption when they come to a meeting, because all they want to talk about is money and how to control. And that's not what a council is. So this is an ongoing process in each community to keep it fresh and anew. And the more you educate them, the larger the number of people who can be serving, but they understand what it's all about to make the parish grow. So the pastoral council then now, the pastoral council then becomes a council of stewardship. Steward of the different ministries that exist in the church. Based on those four elements, you can put everything in there. Of course, you might need to expand them. That's fine, too. They can be expanded. Life in the early church was simpler than it is today in this modern society. And we have to think outside of the box. We cannot live in the old structure of a box of the church of 50 years ago. Times have changed. Times have changed. Travel is not as easy in certain, particularly here in California. I could never live in Southern California again, other than far away from out in the desert is fine. But to live in the LA Orange County, I can't. I lived there in the 70s, when the average freeway was two, maybe three lanes on each side, and you knew not to get on the freeways from 7 to 9 in the morning and 4 to 7 in the afternoon. Well, the rest of the time you could. Now you can't. The Orange County and Los Angeles freeways are moving parking lots. Slow. They're constantly, and now they're 18 lanes wide. I can't count anymore. And I get very nervous. I make sure I pray the Jesus prayer when I'm driving around there, because it wasn't what used to take a half an hour to get someplace is now 2 hours. Thank God we've developed. And somebody complained to me just last week. We've developed, when I was there in California, we were only one church in the whole state. St. Anne, North Hollywood. Okay, certainly St. Anne didn't create or start San Jose or Sacramento, but in the L.A. area, we now have Orange County, which I started in 73. And it's more active than the Cathedral Parish right now. And we started about 10 years ago in Covina, east of Los Angeles. Whoever was there 20 years ago could get to our church in 20 minutes. Now they're talking 2.5 hours, even on Sunday. And we started San Bernardino. And now we have the outreach in Mission Viejo. Orange County is very small area, but it's still Mission Viejo to our church is a 45-minute ride without traffic. So looking at these satellites now, the church is growing. The church is growing. So one of the men, we were in a discussion last week, we were at somebody's house for dinner, and he said, but we were talking about the cathedral being so lax, not many people wanting to do things, not many people coming to church. And we were talking about that, and I was giving some of my opinions on why. And the man said, well, no, but you created the problem. I said, what do you mean I created the problem? He said, all the people in Covina used to come here. All the people in San Bernardino came here. The Orange County people came here. I says, excuse me. No, they didn't. Maybe one family came that far. And the average families are not going to travel that far if they're not catechized well and educated well. They're not going to do that, especially when you're behind the wheel, moving inch by inch by inch by inch. You're not going to get there. So the church has grown. The Los Angeles area has grown. We need five churches down there. The San Fernando Valley should have had, we have one, but L.A. should have one. We were just down in San Pedro last week, and we need a church down in San Pedro for the South County. And we need a church in the Oceanside area, because distance to get to San Diego is not very far, but still, people are not going to travel that much. The society has changed. When they travel to work every day like that, I don't know how they can do it, 2 hours in the car, and they're not going to do it on Sunday, finally. Society is changing. So we have to start looking at that idea and developing it. So I said to the guy, I don't think your thinking is right. What we started, we now have more people. You have enough people in the North Hollywood, San Fernando Valley that could fill that church four times. What are you doing to get them in? Where are you going with it? Well, the priest doesn't go visit them. The priest is one person. You can go visit them too. You can call them up too and welcome them to come to their church. It's not just the priest. We're all in this game together. It's not a game. We're all in this church together, the body of Christ. And we all have that same commitment. So the council needs to be based on what we just said, stewardship and leadership. And once they have it, it continues and you got to develop it. And you keep going with it. And then the more ministries you create in the parish, the better it is. When I was in Michigan, they had the Ladies' Society. New Jersey. They had a ladies' society. When I took over, when I became pastor in 1981, in 81 I became pastor of the church, and the ladies' society was a group of older women, and God bless them, they were very active. Every year they had some social events, and they had a big fashion show every year. So I took over the parish new. I go to the first meeting of the ladies' society, and they start griping to me. You're the priest, you got to go out. We need young ladies here. We need younger women. You know, we're getting tired. We're older. And they were older. We're getting tired of doing the same thing every year. Where's the younger women? We need to get them in. We need to get them. Okay. So I spent 2 months visiting a bunch of the younger mothers. Not young, not baby children, but a younger people's in their 30s and 40s. Okay? And instead of in their 60s and 70s. And finally, 3 months later, we had 35 young ladies come to the meeting. Oh, they all smiled. And it was coming time to set up for their fashion show. So they got all the new ladies in. Okay, let's see. Who's going to be the chairman of the fashion show? So they appoint one lady. So one lady consented to do it. One of the younger ladies. Okay, we always have a raffle before and that night. So one lady decided she would be the raffle. So she's going to give her plan. And no, you can't do it that way. You got to do it this way. You have to have a fur coat to raffle. I don't want a fur coat. So she took the job anyway. Now another lady was going to take the menu and work at the banquet hall where they're going to do this thing. And they started telling her, no, you can't eat that and you can't do this. And they set up this whole fashion show, finally, with a lot of headache. We go to the fashion show. The young ladies did the whole thing. It was fantastic. Everybody worked. And that was the last meeting they ever came to. They didn't come back because they just couldn't work together. So they, when I came back, to, where are all your young ladies, Father? He says, you push them out. New ideas are okay. Let them do what they want. Give them advice and butt out. You push them out. Now, suffer yourselves. You want to keep a society, keep it. And we started a new society of younger people. That's the way. If it's not going to work where everybody, 60-year-old people work with 20-year-old people, fine. Let different groups exist and let them each do something. And let them each do. Last week, the same thing happened in North Hollywood. They've added on to the church, which is 55 years old, a narthex, a vestibule. They never had one there. So they added it on, and there were two bathrooms in the back of the church, in the entrance of the church. And it was horrible. I remember being there. If anyone went to the bathroom, you could always hear the flushing water, and you're in the church. So finally, by adding the narthex on, they closed the bathroom doors from the church itself and put them from the entrance, which was nice. And they added a bride's room and a handicap bathroom. And so they to do that, they had to dig up the grounds and all, a big mess. And they put in new concrete and stamped it and pulled out some old trees and all of that. So we're going to have the rededication of this thing, or the dedication of it. And the interior of the church was all remodeled last week, cleaned and painted and fixed, whatever need to be done, and new rugs and new floor under the benches and whatever. The wood was stripped. All the benches were stripped and refinished. So we're going to have this re-blessing of the church. So I was at the council meeting when my first night or two that I... the third day that I was in California, I came on the 18th. Father said, can you come? We're having an emergency meeting for the council. So we had the emergency meeting for the council, and it was to plan this event. And every 20 people, and we don't want a dinner. We got to have a dinner. And the priest said, no, we should have a dinner with a ticket. No, we don't want that. After a while, make a decision. Wait a minute. So I gave some ideas. I said, appoint a committee. So nobody wanted to take it. But a group of the younger people there. A younger people. not teenagers, of course, younger families, and they decided they would take it. Soon as they made the committee, I said, okay, I'm telling everybody right here now, that's the committee. They are not to come back here next month. They can come back and tell you what they're doing, but they're not coming back to you to say, no, you got to change it this way or change it that way. You appointed them, they will do it. And if you don't like it, don't come. So they sat back. The bishop can get wild once in a while, which is okay. The local priest would have trouble if he did that. But they came. Wednesday night, we had the second meeting. They came in, they gave us their plan. And they brought us the sample of the food. We're not going to have a sit-down dinner. We're going to have more finger food. It's going to be Lent already. We're going to have finger food. And we're going to have 6 o'clock liturgy in the evening because I have Temecula that day in the morning. And the blessing, and then go in, and the liturgy, and then go to the hall for the cocktail. So not a sit-down dinner, no tickets. Everything is complimentary. If they want to give a donation, that's fine. But it's complimentary from the parish. And to get them in. And now they were talking about setting up the food tables. And everybody butted in. I said, excuse me, didn't you hear me last month? They looked. I said, it's their job. They're going to finish it the way they want. Leave them alone. It's going to work very beautiful. I told them later, I said, don't put up tables. Tables limit you to everybody grabbing a seat. Go out and rent a few cocktail tables. It's going to be a 6 o'clock liturgy. We're not going to finish till 7:30 with the blessing and the liturgy. And they're not going to sit there for a big dinner after that. Get some cocktail tables. It's a stand-up reception. A few old people have to sit. We'll have some chairs. And have your little drink, whatever you're going to have, I don't know. And your finger food, and go home. Go home. So basically, again, we have to open our minds to letting other people with ideas use those ideas. And use those ideas. The church is open. So the more ministries you have, the better it is. And the more activity you have in the parish, the better it is. And the growth of the parish takes better.